This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, an update on U.S. politics. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. From healthcare reform to hurricane relief, tax reform, internecine Republican battles, and another horrific mass shooting leading to calls for gun control legislation, there is no shortage of issues to discuss. Despite myriad attempts, U.S. President Donald Trump and the Republican majority in Congress failed by end September to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Mr. Trump then made an all-out push for tax reform. Former Judge Roy Moore, a Christian conservative, easily won a Republican Senate primary in Alabama, defeating incumbent Luther Strange, whom Trump had backed, albeit rather tepidly. At the same time, several moderate or centrist Republicans have decided against running for re-election, such as Congressman Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania and Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee. These trends raise questions about the direction of the Republican Party. President Trump also courted controversy by waging a battle with professional football players about protests during the national anthem over concerns about racial justice. He also lashed out in a series of tweets at the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, who was pleading for a faster U.S. response to the devastation wrought by Hurricane Maria. Electricity on much of the U.S. territory has still not been restored, and food and clean water are scarce. The mass shooting in Las Vegas on October 1st, in which a gunman opened fire on a country music concert, killing 58 and injuring hundreds, plunged America into a state of shock and mourning and revived calls for common sense gun legislation. There's still an ongoing investigation by the special counsel and congressional committees into Russia's interference into the U.S. presidential election and potential ties between Moscow and Trump campaign officials. And we'd be remiss if we didn't underscore a growing gap between President Trump and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson over policy toward North Korea and Iran, prompting press reports, which Mr. Tillerson denies, that he was prepared to resign. Well, joining us for a robust discussion of the issues dominating the U.S. political landscape are John Fortier. He's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and that's a think tank here in Washington. John is also a frequent commentator at these VOA microphones. And Jim Kessler. He's Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. That's a centrist think tank based here in Washington. Jim is also a valued commentator at these VOA microphones. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, John Fortier, let me begin with you. So much to talk about. Let's talk about the general scenario with President Trump. He came in vowing to so-called drain the swamp, get things done, win again, but he seems to be falling short of some of those promises. How do you see it?
Well, I was tired by your introduction, so much going on. Look, I think President Trump came into office with one of the lower job approval ratings, with the lowest in modern history, of a president. And at the time, I think that represented that he was an extremely polarizing figure. Our politics are polarized, but really, everybody had an opinion about Donald Trump to begin with. Nobody was really giving him the benefit of the doubt. He had probably 45% of the American people with him at the start. That number's trailed off. He's had a couple of forays into difficulties that have brought his numbers down. When he first really got his hands dirty in healthcare reform, abolishing Obamacare, you saw the numbers go down, and ultimately Republicans not being able to do that was not helpful to him. The Jim Comey firing and the aftermath has been the strongest thing that really brought his numbers down, and a number of other controversies. So today he sits at 39-40%. That's not the lowest in American history for any president, but it's certainly a low number that would be hard to do well, and I expect Republicans won't do well in midterm elections. And if he were to stay at this number, would have a very hard time, or would certainly not be reelected at these numbers. So the president has started at a controversial level and come down pretty significantly.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your take on Trump's leadership, or perhaps lack thereof. Again, on the campaign trail, he pitched himself as a deal maker. He could get things done, look out for the so-called forgotten people, but he has not been able to repeal and replace Obamacare, a promise he made. Several members of his staff have resigned, or he's let them go. How do you see it?
Well, there's a lot of chaos there. He's made a lot of mistakes in his first year in office. You know, they're near fatal mistakes. He hasn't won any converts. If you weren't supporting him before the election, you're not supporting him now, and you dislike him even more. Healthcare was a huge mistake. They gambled a lot on that. They had no plan, and it became apparent, and they were not able to repeal Obamacare, and they were not able to replace Obamacare, and they wasted 8 months, and they looked like fools. He hired a lot of people that have no business being in a White House job, included the firebrand Steve Bannon. He finally got rid of him. But now Steve Bannon is waging war from the populist right through his Breitbart post. So you have a Republican Party that is divided. You have a president that is still in the midst of firing the people that he hired 8 months ago. So chaos has reigned the first 8 months and will probably continue to reign for at least the next 4 months.
Back to you, John Fortier, to talk about the state of the Republicans. They're the majority in Congress, in the House of Representatives and the Senate. But again, it doesn't reflect well on them that they have not been able to repeal, replace Obamacare. Now we have this tax reform plan, which is also rather controversial. And Mr. Trump also is often at odds with many members of the leadership.
Well, I don't want to paint a rosy picture here. I think Jim and I both describe a presidency having some troubles. But I do think there are some ways in which the president has become a little more traditional. He's taken up traditional Republican issues. He's shaken up his White House in a way that probably is helpful to him. Before, the chaos and the number of advisors who really were doing their own thing was hurting him, and having General Kelly as chief of staff, I think, is helpful. Look, I think the question is, Republicans do have majorities in the Senate. There are narrow majorities to do things through special processes which allow a majority vote. They have not been able to corral those 50 votes, certainly on health care. I think tax reform is a big issue for them, and we'll see how that goes. I do think while there are all sorts of difficulties, it is a somewhat easier issue to trade off and split the difference on, and I think there's an opportunity for them to actually come through with some tax reform. The original plans are obviously very ambitious, and they may fall short of that, but you know, I think the Republicans do have some opportunity to do things in that realm. So I don't think it's all lost, but for, you know, for the president to turn around things, I think a few things might happen. One, you know, there's some good signs in the economy. He still gets credit among his base, less among the elites, but for doing well in the economy. Some of his economic populism has some resonance in his base, but it's a difficult situation. He is going to need something to turn himself around because he's at a stage right now where he would do poorly in the midterm elections again and would not be reelected at these levels.
Back to you, Jim Kessler, for your take on how the Republicans are doing, especially now we have this tax reform proposal on the table. But then many critics are saying that the tax cuts that are being proposed actually benefit wealthy people. And what about the Democrats? How are they positioning themselves?
It should not be that hard for a Republican president with a Republican Congress to pass a quote-unquote tax reform bill. It's really more of a tax cut bill. They should have the votes to do it. The problem is this bill is going to be pretty lousy. It is going to increase the deficit by at least $1.5 trillion. That's the early indication. Most of those tax cuts are going to go for people who really don't need it, people who are either making a lot of money or have a ton of wealth already. We do need to reform a corporate tax code because we need to attract businesses and have businesses start here and stay here in this country. But they should be able to pull it off. I mean, if they don't, it is the height of incompetence. At the same time, you have a very divided Republican Party. You have what just happened in Alabama, in which really an extremist won a primary over an incumbent. There's been a civil war within the Republican Party, really starting with Trump getting into the race for president. And what's happened is on the Republican side, but also on the Democratic side too, in general, in contested races, the candidate who seems least associated to the party that they are running in is the one who are winning these races. And I think that's a signal in this country of deep dissatisfaction with politics in Washington and with both parties.
Back to you, John Fortier, to talk about the aftermath of this horrific mass shooting that we witnessed in Las Vegas. There have been approximately 273 mass shootings already in the United States this year. Do you think anything will change as a result of this? Any type of gun reform legislation being proposed, potentially passed?
There are some rumblings that there might be some minor and relatively pragmatic limitations on some of the accessories to guns, one that may have allowed him to fire more rounds than is allowed by law. But I think on the bigger question, the public is divided. It's a funny thing in public opinion. On the one hand, there are certainly people who support very specific restrictions about gun background checks. But when you push the issue, I think many people retreat into their corners of, is this a pro-Second Amendment or a gun control legislation? And there the parties are extremely divided. So while on some very specific issues, there are large majorities of the American public saying we should limit this loophole and this thing or the other, I think most of the time these debates turn on where do you stand ultimately on guns. And the Republican Party and Democratic Party are very different and even more different than they were 15 or 20 years ago. So I don't suspect we will see fundamental change on this. We may see some smaller things around the edges.
Well, Jim Kessel, let me turn to you on this, because no matter where you stand on the Second Amendment, and I think everybody acknowledges the Second Amendment allows the right to bear arms. However, the amendment, as far as I can see, doesn't allow for, you know, assault weapons to be used the way that the gunman used it and the way others have used it in these mass shootings before. Nobody is saying one shouldn't be able to defend oneself, but this looks like an assault, like a military attack. So there must be some convergence on this issue at some point.
The Supreme Court actually has decided this, and what they have said is that the Second Amendment does confer an individual right to own a firearm, but that right allows for reasonable restrictions. And the question is, it's up to Congress to decide what those restrictions are, and then the Supreme Court to decide whether you've gone too far or not. Certainly the types of weapons that this shooter used would fall outside the bounds of what should be allowed based on what the Supreme Court has decided before. I've worked on this issue for 25 years. Let me tell you what the sort of the heart of the situation is in this country. We have 300 million guns that are in private hands in America. That's a lot of guns. And we have 400,000 gun crimes each year. There's two ways to look at these statistics. One is, well, that is a ton of gun crime. And the other is, well, 299,600,000 guns didn't do anything wrong last year. The divide in this country is between people who think that guns are a form of self-protection versus those who feel that guns are a scourge and are essentially just a purely a dangerous object.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. We're discussing the tumultuous U.S. political landscape with our special guest, John Fortier. He's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Idi Musa. She's a loyal listener from Kumasi, Ghana. We'd love to hear from more of our female listeners. Ladies, if you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guests. First to you, John Fortier, to continue our discussion about the political landscape, President Trump. We've been talking a lot about domestic issues, but let's turn now a bit to the foreign policy front. We're witnessing a rift between President Trump and Secretary of State Tillerson, apparently policy differences with regard to North Korea. Secretary of State Tillerson was in China and talking about having direct lines of communication with North Korea, given the North Korean nuclear threat. President Trump said, I told Rex Tillerson that he's wasting his time trying to negotiate with Little Rocket Man, the epithet he gives to Kim Jong-un. This mixed message, John, can't be good for U.S. credibility around the world.
I generally agree with you, and I think Donald Trump is obviously an unconventional figure in all sorts of ways, and one who came in with, you know, little foreign policy experience and a set of advisors who was not known in Washington, really. I think in many ways he has come a long way in putting people in place, at, like Jim Mattis and H.R. McMaster at National Security, where he has, I think, started to craft, in some respects, a more traditional foreign policy. Now, North Korea is a, you know, one of the most insolvable problems that we've seen, that prior administrations have struggled to sort of perhaps kick the can down the road. And I think, you know, this is one that there's no easy answer to. I don't think this is a traditional or the best way to conduct foreign policy. But I will note an interesting story in the papers this week of Trump being willing to be seen as the crazy man in the room, encouraging his aides to say, look, I'm somebody who actually is a little unpredictable behind the scenes. And you see that. It's not always pretty. I'm not always thrilled with it. But ultimately, if this is calculated, I think the calculation is that Donald Trump sees himself as a, you know, wanting to be a strong person, throwing people off in negotiations across the way. Will that work? Not clear. As for Rex Tillerson, I do think Rex Tillerson has always been somewhat on the outs in this administration. His State Department is not filled with people. There are ways in which he is not a traditional Secretary of State, doesn't speak in the way to the American public as a traditional Secretary of State. So even before this rift, it was unclear whether Rex Tillerson had a great future in this administration.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your take on this rift between the President and the Secretary of State, the mixed messages. How do you see this being read by allies and adversaries around the world?
Well, you know, the question is there a method to the madness? Are the tweets about, you know, little rocket man, is this a plan that we're going to have a good cop and a bad cop? And the crazy president and the secretary of state that says, look, you better negotiate. He's unpredictable. I think if there was truly a method to the madness, I'd be more patient with what's going on. I do not think that there's a method to the madness. I'm not sure they really know what they're doing. Tillerson's gone. It's just a matter of the day that he's fired or allowed to resign to spend more time with his family and go back to pumping gas at Exxon. Trump isn't real kind to the people that he feels are disloyal to him and his administration, and sort of the personal attributes that Trump wants from somebody, which is to kind of be a yes man and to be a sycophant, doesn't serve to make good government. The other thing about it is he's entangled in this Russia investigation, and we just don't know how much this is affecting foreign policy and how much he is vulnerable to whether there's Russian collusion in the election. And I think that cloud hangs over everything he does on foreign policy. I'm not ready to give him the benefit of the doubt on the method to the madness, and I don't think a lot of world leaders are willing to do it either.
Well, it even appears that some stalwart Republicans, Senator Bob Corker, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, also has expressed some misgivings, John Fortier, with respect to this type of leadership or this type of messaging. And, of course, he considers that Secretary Tillerson, Secretary Mattis, and the chief of staff, John Kelly, he sees them, that is Bob Corker, as, you know, holding down the fort, so to speak.
Well, look, I think there is a way in which many of them have provided a stabilizing presence. I'm not as clear that Secretary Tillerson has provided that role. I think, as I say, he has been relatively on the outs from the beginning. Yes, a somewhat more traditional figure, but also someone from outside of the traditional establishment. So I agree with Jim that Tillerson's days seemed numbered before this controversy. Oddly enough, it may preserve his tenure for a bit. I might disagree with Jim about the number of weeks or months he has left. He's not a player that seems like he is ensconced in this administration and will be there for the long term.
Let's talk about a couple of other issues that sort of straddle both domestic and foreign policy. There's the question of DACA, and then, of course, that's a deferred action for childhood arrivals policy. The Trump administration last month ended that, which began under former President Barack Obama. The program allowed nearly 800,000 so-called dreamers to work legally in the United States without being deported. The administration said it ended DACA because they thought that Obama overstepped his constitutional authority by creating the policy without congressional approval. So now Mr. Trump is calling on Congress to enact a law to potentially protect DACA recipients. Where do you think that's going?
Well, there was a two-week period or so over the summer where Donald Trump had a couple of moves where he worked with Democrats in Congress and actually, I think, benefited in his poll numbers, one on some temporary budget matters and two, striking at least a high-level deal that something would be done legislatively about DACA. I have to admit, I'm a little skeptical of the details of that. I think the big picture deal was made. But of course, once one gets down to writing that legislation, there are a lot of things that could go wrong. On many other fronts, Donald Trump has indicated what he said on the campaign trail, that he has strong reservations about illegal immigration, about immigration, that he's taking a tougher line. This would be the one area where he might fall away from that. But I think if he does, the combination of that with some other measures that will strengthen his anti-immigration or, you know, immigration security questions are there. I don't think he's going to get the wall in exchange for DACA. That seems to be a bridge too far for Democrats. But, you know, I think he's perhaps willing to deal on this issue while at the same time broadly on immigration being taking a much tougher line.
Back to you, Jim Kessler, your former boss, Senator Chuck Schumer, minority leader in the Senate, and of course, Nancy Pelosi, minority leader in the House of Representatives. We're talking with
President Trump about this very topic, as John Fortier alluded to, that perhaps they have a deal on DACA. How do you see this and the Democrats' role in shaping this policy?
Yeah, so those 2 weeks on those deals, with the budget deal and DACA, those have been the high point of Trump's administration thus far. I think it's a lesson to him that it's possible to make deals with Democrats, and he likes to win, and there's ways to do it. Here's going to be the difficulty on DACA, both on the left and on the right. The activists on the left were furious with Schumer and Pelosi for cutting a partial deal on immigration. They've always wanted something that's comprehensive. I think those activists are wrong. You know, you're going to now have to break immigration reform into pieces and pass it a little of this and a little of that, a little left and a little bit of right, and get it done piecemeal. And then the folks on the far right were infuriated with Trump. So if you look at the far right media sites, the Breitbarts and others, the Drudge Reports, the Roger Stones, they excoriated Trump. So you have the extremes on both sides really trying to scuttle the deal. And particularly on the Republican side, those extremes scare Republican incumbents. They just saw what happened in Alabama with Luther Strange losing a primary. Eric Cantor lost. He was a Republican leader in Congress, lost a primary in Virginia a couple years ago over the issue of immigration. So I think you're going to see a lot of scared members of Congress, particularly on the Republican side. I'm still hopeful something will get done within the six-month window that Trump gave for a deadline. I still think it's very possible.
As we close, John Fortier, we also have President Trump tweeting with regard to Puerto Rico, criticizing the mayor of San Juan, his tweets about the National Football League, the NFL. What does it say about his leadership style and ability to bring the country together, particularly after these terrible hurricanes that have devastated both Puerto Rico and, of course, Florida and Texas, and then after this terrible shooting in Las Vegas?
Well, I think on all these issues, it's difficult in a couple of ways. I think the Trump administration had gotten some good marks for its handling of the earlier hurricanes in Texas, Louisiana. And I still think the jury is out to say how well they've handled Puerto Rico. I think it's very hard to say, have they done a good job responding to what was a bigger hurricane, and the disaster was much bigger. But he, you could say, picked a fight or took the bait on a fight with the mayor. And as president, you know, it looks like you're picking on somebody smaller. So I think that was divisive. On the national anthem, look, I think the president ratcheted up the heat on this one. But this was an issue that I think many Republicans, or many people out in the country, football fans, were already unhappy with the situation of some of the protests of the national anthem. And now, if Donald Trump had expressed that in a way of he was dismayed about it or wished it would go away, you know, that might have been a more traditional way to emphasize those issues. But he went right at it. And I think his calling the player a name that we wouldn't say on the air and other things that ratcheted up made this extremely divisive. At the end of the day, the American people are divided on these things. I think his base and many NFL football fans are still very worried about these issues of people protesting the flag publicly in the way that they were. But he has made this a much more divisive controversy than it was.
The last word to you, Jim Kessler. Over President Trump's style, his divisive tweets, interpreted by many as rather divisive with respect to the NFL. And I think we can say these football players are simply protesting what they see as racial injustice, but have no disrespect for this country or the laws that underpin it.
Let's forever separate the words "bring this country together" and Donald Trump and putting them in the same sentence, because that is not what he wants to do as president. That is not his style. That is not how he got elected. That's not how he won the Republican primary. He is strengthened, he believes, by a divided country. He thinks that doing things that divide and polarize the country enhances his power rather than diminishes his power. So he is going to do things over and over again that designs to create cleaves and create controversy. I understand both sides of the national anthem issue. I go to a lot of sporting events. I'm very sympathetic to Black Lives Matter and the police brutality that has happened against African Americans in this country. I will stand at the national anthem. There will never be a time when I will kneel. That is not what I will cross. I don't think the president needed to weigh in, but he felt that it was to his advantage politically, so he did so.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites.
I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another encounter on The Voice of America.